If you're like me, you want to get your business ahead, but there's certain skills you need, but you just don't have. If this sounds like you, then you need to head over to Fiverr. They have a whole array of professionals that can help you in different areas, from design to writing, marketing, and more. They have you covered. I seriously can't tell you how much Fiverr.com has helped me along with this podcast. I've used them so much for this podcast. It's been unreal. They make my flyers. They go ahead and I hired this guy to help me upload each episode. And in the beginning, in order for me to be all over the place, I was totally going on Fiverr. I've gotten so much for my business through them. So please use my link, which you can find in the description of this episode, or you can go to MarcellaAlonzo.com and book there through Fiverr today. You'll be glad you did. Hello and welcome to Get Schooled with Marcella Alonzo. Today I have Vic Legina on. Thank you, Vic.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for having me on here. It's nice to see you and talk to you. Where are you, by the way?
I'm in New York.
Okay, all right.
I'm in New York. It's snowing. And you're in Vegas?
Yeah, I'm in Vegas.
Oh, okay. So yeah. I got the approval from my good friend. We have a mutual friend. Mm-hmm. That everybody knows, that everybody needs to Google, Ava Devine, who you used to work with.
Yes.
And she spoke wonderful and lovely about you. You're a director. And so you're right up my league.
Good. That's good. Yeah. I have many, many fond memories of Ava.
Me too. Me too.
She's like a tornado. A tornado of just bewilderment.
The nicest, sweetest person you can ever know, with the most empathy.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
But like now when I see all these new, I call them pandemic Beckys, and they say, I'm into gangbangs, I'm into this, I'm a slut, whatever. I'm like, no, you are not. No, Ava Devine.
Yeah.
She's a very rare one.
Yeah, it's funny. The first time I shot her was when I first got to Vegas in 2006. Mm-hmm. And right away, I was just like, holy shit. Like, like I came from Miami, mm-hmm. and they were like junior league compared to this. And then Ava Devine is thrust upon me. And I'm like, wow. It's like, talk about a woman who just did not discriminate against any penis, person, any human. She was like, yeah, if you want to have sex, I am down to go. And some of the things that came out of her mouth were, I was like, did I just hear that correctly? So she was one of my first real experiences with a high octane performer. And I shot her a lot over the years. And one of the things that I did was, the book that I'm promoting, Filthy Here, mm-hmm. starts off with, me talking about the craziest live show I did that was at my house, mm-hmm. which was a live orgy that got busted by the cops 15 minutes after we were done. But that wasn't the craziest one. That honor goes to one I did about 2 months later. And Ava was the star of that one.
Oh,
and,
of course she was.
Yeah. And when it came down to it, it was supposed to be this massive gangbang. We're talking 30 guys. But these performers had to run the gauntlet, basically, to try to become the next Brazzers male porn star. And finally, when they get through all these levels, they get to Ava Devine. Guess how many people made it to her? Like five. That was it. And she was disappointed that there was only five. That was like, that's all that happened is like, yeah, they all failed miserably except for the five you saw.
Men don't realize, I've had Miles on and he did a very good episode because he broke it down to what it's really like. But a lot of men don't realize how difficult it is to be in porn.
Yeah. I mean, it's the reason why I use the same six or seven people, because they knew what I needed and I knew them very well, to the point where we had almost a harmony together, where we're shooting and I'm moving camera and they know to open up, and you've got to be like this all the time. And if you're down, you got to get back in there real quick. And Jordan Ash, the late great Jordan Ash, talked about all of that in a speech that could have been in like the porn Animal House about trying to hype them up. And like all of this stuff, I still have the footage for. So in the audiobook, you hear these things throughout the entire audiobook. You hear Ava Devine clips, you hear Jordan Ash clips, because it's all about like, let's get down to the essence of the insanity of what it is to produce porn. Like that is what I tried to capture in my book. And a lot of people have been shaken by it and they're like, wow, I really learned a lot. Thank you. And it's been fun enlightening people for sure.
And I feel like with the female performers, I personally never got into porn because I was close friends with Ava Devine and I know how she could take dick. And I know I couldn't take what she, you know, I knew I could never be that level. Therefore, I was like, I'm not even going to attempt. But I think even on the female end, there's a certain type of performer, female performer.
Well, this was in the past, I believe. I think it's a rare breed.
Yeah.
They don't really exist anymore.
They don't.
They're still out there.
Yeah.
But the Ava Devines or even the Adriana Chechiks or anyone of that magnitude, they're going way of the dinosaur, unfortunately, because it's no longer performing or being aspired to be a strong performer. It's I am an influencer with a lot of the following and I'm willing to play with a penis on camera. That's what we're getting these days. And I'm like,
no, you know what? I totally agree. And I'm a female that agrees with you. And that's like, I just because I have a following doesn't mean I'm meant for porn. I truly believe what you're saying because I watched this woman before she, because I danced with Ava. I knew who she was. I've witnessed stuff. And she was meant and built for porn. And she didn't feel uncomfortable in certain situations. She didn't feel, you know, you really as a woman need to feel 100% comfortable and be in every situation.
Well, then it seems like Ava's a very comfortable person within her skin because it was like riding a bike with her. Like she just gets into it.
She was meant. She was meant for it. She was meant.
Yeah.
And nowadays, I just feel like with the popularity of OnlyFans, which I have an OnlyFans, I'm glad or whatever. But just because you have an OnlyFans, you know, when you go on set, that's a totally different ball game.
Right.
That's all day long. That's
yes. Yeah, no, I agree with you. And I was noticing that towards the tail end of my career where I was like, it was a generational thing for sure. Mm-hmm. You know, I could sound like a crotchety old man. These kids today, they don't know how to perform on porn, you know, like shaking the cane. But truth is like I saw less and less of it. And I was finding myself just being completely out of touch with the new generation of porn stars. So to me, I felt that was kind of dangerous because, you know, asking people to have consensual sex on camera when, you know, you don't really quite understand them. It got a little too slippery of a slope for me.
You're Generation X like me?
Yes.
So, we understand each other. Generation X is so different than millennials.
Yes. Yes. And completely different than Gen Z. And that was kind of like my argument, my thesis a little bit in the book, my thesis in Filthy, which was basically when we would shoot and we would encounter typical production problems, right? Mm-hmm. Our generation would talk, we would look at each other in the eye, we would figure out a solution and we would execute it. And then we would be done with the day and we would all make our money. Later on, that wasn't the case. There was no communication because I don't think the younger generation knows how to communicate very well. It became like, I was even to the point where I was like, help me understand you so we can get this done. And met with like, I don't know. And you're like, okay, we're in trouble. Like this is Houston. We have a problem here.
Right. Right.
So that was a reason why I got out of it. And I've come to terms with it and I've analyzed it and I've made peace with it. And it was a wonderful ride when it happens. Not without its low points. And of course, it always had its high points. But I'm glad I've lived a life that I was able to merit writing a book to tell all these stories.
Now, how did you originally get into the business and start like with browsers and everything? How did this all evolve?
So I talked. Yeah, I've talked about this like a bit, and I'll give you the abridged version in case people have listened to these, because I don't know how that all works. But basically, my background was in production. I have 2 degrees, a Bachelor of Science and a Master of Fine Arts in production, which allows me to teach on a college level, which I did at one point in my life. Former college professor, right here. Okay, which is so odd to think about it because of where I had eventually ended. But I went to LA with a woman. It was not a good relationship. It was kind of toxic and dysfunctional. And it was birthed out of needing to make money because I was failing terribly in Los Angeles. And I answered an ad on adult staffing and bullshitted my way into directing a feature film, which I did in the Valley in April of 2002. And I was able to kind of keep it together for another year in LA before it was time where I was in too much debt. And I decided to limp back to South Florida with my girlfriend in tow. And around that time was when I met the guys who would become Brazzers. And I started shooting content for them. I found the leads on gofuckyourself.com.
Go fuck
And
yourself.
that was the board where people would seek content producers. And these guys I would talk to on ICQ, Instant Messenger, they would say, hey, or I'd be like, hey, I'm shooting something in a hotel room with this person. Here are her pictures. And they're like, can you get us a $200 tit fuck scene? And I'd be like, no problem. I'm your guy. So that's what I did. I would book a hotel room with a couple and I'd be like, got another nut in you, fella? And then they would go ahead and we would split that $200. And the original Brazzers guys were all about the tits and all about tit fucking and all that. And that's how I started with them. And then it led to shooting for their sites, Baby Got Boobs and Mommy Got Boobs and Doctor Adventures. And these were the guys that were going to take over porn. And I got in with them and they were very happy with my work because I worked hard for them and I gave them what they wanted for at a reasonable dollar amount. And when it was time for them to level up, I knew I didn't want to go back to LA because I knew the cost of living out there would have been hard to overcome. So I set up shop out here in Vegas and I ditched the girlfriend about a year before I made it to Vegas and got out of that debt within 10 months after ending that relationship. So it was born out of financial need, but then I had this business, this booming business. So I was like, okay, let's see how far we can go. And I bought this house in what was the peak of the market, March of 06 in Vegas, before it blew up in 2 years. And it was a perfect storm of getting in with the right people who are ready to take over the internet and the porn biz. And I was their workhorse. And I fought through the recession and I helped build that company, which is Brazzers. That's the reality of everything.
Wow. So
Yeah.
you were there from the very beginning.
The OG, they won't acknowledge that because we did our divorce was a little bit messy. But yeah, so I've been erased from the annals of their existence pretty much. But yes, you could say from that point on until 2020, I was their head guy and I built a lot of what you see on that website now. So yeah.
Now, when you started to direct and you started to really get into it, how was you as a male dating if you wanted to start dating a girl while you were in that business? Because a lot of women, when we enter the adult entertainment business, it's so difficult for us to date or to talk to anybody. Or like
Right.
you call them civilians, I call them squares, I call them I have different name, civilians, squares, or
All
whatever.
applicable, yes. All applicable, of course, yes.
But it's hard. I always wonder this for the males that are involved because it's a very hard thing. Like if I start even talking to a guy, and I remember one time I was talking to a guy and he's like, oh, can we film something? And I'm like, what the hell? What should my porn name be? It's a real big turnoff when
Okay, yeah, because
they ask.
they're more fanboys and more
Yeah,
like
they're more
okay.
fanboys, or they don't, or the famous. What's the craziest thing you've ever done?
Sure.
But so, how was it for you to date when you were in the business? Because I'm
so it was. So you're talking about the novelty aspect of it, right? Yeah. And there was a lot of that for me. So I went from I had a hat trick of really bad relationships. That the in between those was when I would try to date. So when I first got out to Vegas, I set up some of the dating sites like Match.com, and you know, I was a novelty, as you say. Yeah. Or as you outlined, and you know, you realize that once you're the novelty, it doesn't really go anywhere. So back then, I kind of made these false concessions in my brain about I have to compromise if I'm going to be in a relationship, and that line of thinking led me to the biggest mind fuck of a relationship that I do outline quite a bit. Like, if you like shit shows out there, people. Oh, just read about my love life in this book, because it took so many bad directions until I finally had enough, and I finally had some screw ups, and I finally had some learning experience to the point where I was able to find that happy medium. But realizing that as long as I am in the business, a genuine, functional, healthy relationship was going to escape me. And that's really how it was. Mm-hmm. So it was, it's sad. I mean, I guess that's why I'm still a bachelor at 50 years old over here. Even though I am trying to see what's out there. And, you know, I think there's been a lot of good reception from females who have read the book. Mm-hmm. I'm like, here, this is a how-to guide. Here's the manual of me trying to date. And if they get through it all and they still want to talk to me, I say that might be a keeper. But it's always just been, you know, pissing in the wind, you know, trying to date civilians or not. You know, you see the same things happen over and over again.
Yeah. They ask the crazy questions, then they assume, then it's like a level of jealousy that's, you know, because you got to keep on working.
Right. And I had that jealousy too, even though I wasn't a male performer. I was just shooting it. But my ex-fiance, was convinced I was banging everyone and everything, which I wasn't. I mean, I'll swear on these dogs that I wasn't. I was under the guise of monogamy for that 2.5 year hellish relationship before I finally wised up and got disengaged after a couple pregnancies that didn't last because they were miscarriages. Like, there was a lot of the universe being like, dude, you're not supposed to be with this woman. Like, I don't know what else there is. So when I took my lumps from that relationship, and there was a lot of deception and there was a lot of dysfunction and a lot of toxicity, that's when I was kind of like, all right, we are never going to go back there. And we started to try to date a little more cautiously and realistically. And, you know, and then I went from the other extreme of being a lying, cheating bastard with my ex. Her name is Jackie, and she's talked in the book. And I had drinks with her last night. We're still good friends. We realized we had a good relationship. We really love each other, but we are not ruining it with sex. We are just like being buds. Like, we are the nice, happy coexisting ex couple, you know, former wife.
Sometimes,
you know,
that companionship, though, of when you, and it doesn't include sex, like, it can be satisfying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all I need. And like,
right.
We have been very forthcoming about both of our misdeeds, and I talk about it a lot. And she yells at me. She's like, you portrayed me like a real piece of shit. And I'm like, actually, no, I didn't. I said some really lovely things. You're just choosing
to focus on the negatives. Yeah.
Right. I was like, but I say some really wonderful things, and I give her a shout out right in the beginning, you know? So I would say that there was a few good things that came out of porn. She was one of them, because I really have someone that I know would, I say in the book, like, she would ride into town on a horse firing guns to save me from the hangman. Like, that's the kind of woman she is. And I'm like, it's such a wonderful image of her that, and she came out of porn. So I had to get through that one and then realize, okay, let's just keep it casual. Let's just do the open thing. That was like my phase 3 until I finally was done with porn. And now I'm in phase 4, which is, who the fuck knows what happened? Like, whoever decides to shack up with me, I want to meet this woman because, you know, because she's going to be like, wow, this dude has seen a lot, has done a lot. And I don't know if I can fill those shoes. Like that's the challenge I have now, really.
Right. Right.
You know,
who were some of your favorite performers to always work with?
I liked Kendra Lust a lot. She was great. Always nice. Always sweet. Always professional. I love Julia Ann. Another one where, you know, not only because she has saved so many dogs, and I'm a huge dog person, her seat in heaven is secure based on the sheer number of dogs that that she has saved and helped. Yeah. Let's see who else. I mean, Cheshit was a strong performer, like great, but when you got her there, you know, there was a lot of cancellation and all of that. And that seemed to happen more as time went on. A lot of times in the past, girls would get on a plane no matter what shit they were dealing with, and they rub some fucking dirt on it and they got the scene done, you know? Whereas later on, it just became, no, I'm not feeling well and I'm not coming. And it's like, okay, I could have used a little more heads up, but that was the nature of it. She was great. Who else? I mean, I had favorites, you know. Monique Alexander always put a smile on my face when I saw her on a booking because I knew what kind of day I was going to have. Nikki Hunter. Do you remember Nikki Hunter?
Yes. I've heard of her.
She's just so sweet. Such a good-hearted person. Like, I looked at the energy of the person as well, not just the performance. Uh-huh. And were they cool and were they professional? And if they checked all those boxes and I knew we were going to have a fun day smiling, we were going to make our money, those are my favorite. You know, those are always my favorite. And there's a lot of those. I'm shortchanging a lot of people right now. Veronica Avlov, are you familiar with her?
No, I don't know who she is, but
she was a MILF performer. Mm-hmm. And she actually gave me a good shout out on the book. She read it and she said to me, she's like, it's so funny reading about that because she was there. She saw a lot of that. She's like, I had no idea what thin ice you were on. And I'm glad you held it together. And I'm like, you know what, Veronica? So am I, because I could live to tell about it, which unfortunately a lot of people couldn't because they passed away well before their time, you know? And I have a lot of in memoriams in this book, you know, people that I grew close with that are no longer with us and realizing the pain they were in. So
did you, do you feel like MILF performers were more the older performers were more responsible than some of the younger performers?
Yeah, I think so. And I think that's a generational thing for sure. Mm-hmm. They were more of my generation. And there was a sense of work ethic that even like, you know, there got to a point where someone was having an issue and they had my number. They would call me. They're like, look, here's what's happening. I really don't want to cancel, but I think you need to know. And I'd be like, thank you for just communicate. We will solve all of these problems, me and my team. And I had a good team over the years. I had a lot of fucktards along the way, but I had at the end a really good core of workers where it's like, let's put our heads together. Let's find the solution. It's there. And they at least gave it to you and they gave you their all when they showed up. Of course, you had your messes. You had your alcoholics. You had your, you know, those who were perpetually high on Zanny bars. And, you know, you're just like, okay, here we go. Let's see if we can get this done legally and, you know, with compliance. But you had some handfuls too. I mean, it was the nature of the job.
Mm-hmm. Is there ever days that you miss directing?
Yeah, I would say there was a time in second ownership. So when I was there was first, second, third ownership. I left during third ownership. Mm-hmm. Made it through 16 years of three ownerships. And I would say building it in the beginning was great because it was so new and so fresh and like so busy and so much going on. But it was when the second regime took over where like it seemed like there was endless amounts of money and the concepts were just getting more and more crazy. And they were just throwing so much money and cash that you're like, okay, let's figure out how to do this. And this is when I developed my cocaine problem because they call it Bolivian marching powder for a reason. Mm-hmm. Like it does make you more productive, but that's when I was like knocking out live shows and 25 shoots a month with multiple teams. I mean, we're talking high intense, high pressure environments. And I look at it with back as I guess a lot of people do in their time in the trenches when they like were looking next to their people and we all came together as a team and we got through it. We muscled through this this war of porn. And it was like, I still talk with these guys. And like, we just reminisce about these times. Obviously we do that for a reason, because it was fun and interesting and crazy, you know, like production, I think you would agree, is high pressure, high intense, a lot of moving parts. Throw fucking on top of it, and then you're throwing like kerosene on a fire, and we're all just like in the chaos and trying to like get out to the other side. And I'm like, follow me, troops. I know the way. And that's how it used to be. And I really enjoy it. And then eventually it started spiraling down and sucking, and I started hating my job. And that was very apparent towards the end. So.
Yeah, you were in it for 20 years, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw a lot. I saw a lot and experienced a lot. You know, I've got my scars. There's no doubt about it. But, you know, being away from it for 4 years now, which is, I'm coming up on the four-year anniversary of not shooting for Brazzers. It was the day the world shut down. Yeah, that was my last shoot with them. And it wasn't because of COVID. It was just the things that were happening during COVID, and how the business was changing during COVID, and me realizing certain things that I think it's time, like you kind of know when it's time to hang it up, you know, you have that moment, and then making peace with things and, you know, being grateful and having gratitude of what you do have and being able to still be here, you know? So I cannot think of a more colorful existence for a lot of people. And I think that's why I wrote the book, because whenever I would be sitting with someone, they're like, you were in porn? Oh, I want to hear about it. Well, now I just give them a sticker with a QR code.
Here you that go. That's a smart way. I need to write a book then, because like people, I just like whenever I meet anybody, now I'm realizing like I just am upfront with people now. You know what I'm saying? Or what my past is. But
right.
They will ask questions, and I was taking writing classes, and I got kind of aggravated because all of a sudden people were like, they were writing about sex work, and they were just getting it totally, totally wrong. Right.
Okay. Right.
And then like in my third class, I just outed myself out. And I said, if you've never sold pussy, you have no reason or like you have no reason to be writing about sex work. If you've never sold pussy in any form, kind of way, filmed it, you know, taped it, sold it, whatever. You have no right to be speaking like that. Like,
and, I like the term slinging puss. Yeah, that's a personal favorite.
Like, well, no, because it's just like, because I was taking these writing classes and it was two people, and they were so off in different
things.
Now I was like, now I'm going to be setting everybody the truth with the sex group.
I'm telling you, there's stories out there, and that's definitely a way to do it. For me, this whole thing is like a grassroots moment. I'm spreading the gospel of filthy one person at a time.
One
I go out
at a time.
Yeah, we talk, and I know right away, are you my audience or are you not my audience? And
you know,
I give them a nice sticker that's got, you know, the cover, and it leads to my website, vicvagina.com, and then the trailer for the
book. And you've got
is
some
there.
Dirty stories in there.
I do. And, you know, one of the things that was interesting was what I had shot before I vacated my studio, before I sold it. I took on a tenant. Like, this is the end. This is like after Brazzers and in the middle of the pandemic and everything else. But one thing I wanted to do before I got out of porn was, you know, I was shooting in two studios and houses over the course of my career. And I always shot movies that ended with a facial. You know, that was all I did. Mm-hmm. And I looked at it like, if I didn't do something creative while I had all of this at my disposal, my fingertips, shame on me. So that's what I did over 6 days. I shot this thing that eventually became the trailer for the book. And that is what is on VicLegiana.com. And to get people to view it, there are boobies. Okay. There are boobies. There are porn star boobies in it. So just go there. And if that doesn't wet your whistle for this book, I don't know what it is. Because I really tried to capture the ridiculousness and the insanity of the porn industry and porn production without making it beautiful and glamorous, because it wasn't. It wasn't
right,
at all.
Right. I have to ask, how was it filming orgies with all those people?
chaos. Chaos. Especially when you're dealing with live ones.
Mm-hmm.
Because let's say they were asking, and they were asking for double penetration and anal. Well, when you're not shooting live, if there's a little bit of duty, well, you can just grab a baby wipe. You can wipe it off. But when you're shooting live, you have to shoot it carefully. So you don't show that. So you don't ruin the emotion or the fantasy. And that was kind of the chaotic part.
Wait a minute. But girls should be clean before. They should be clean. I'm so used to Ava. I know the whole process.
You were right. And I will say this for Ava, your friend. Yeah. She was always fine. She's got the cleanest ass.
Yeah.
Right. I know that. Never a problem. But when a girl, you know, cites that she's vegan and she's drinking coffee and you ask her if that's like the right thing to do. And they're like, yeah, it's fine. I know my body. And then their liquid shit is piling up on Jordan Ash's torso during the live show. Yeah, that's the thing. And I was the mad conductor of these crazy trains. That I was like, okay, I will get you through it, folks. You know, just follow me. That was always it. Just follow my lead. I will get you through it. I think people appreciated that.
Yeah. No, but how can a girl be vegan and go do an anal scene? Like,
I don't know. You know, like,
that's kind of,
these are those complicated problems.
That, I don't know. That like, I know better. I just know, but like,
I'm glad you do. And I'm glad there was a lot who did. But there were those who didn't. And, the result was a heavy use of the wiping stations we had off camera.
Oh.
Trash cans, loads and loads of baby wipes. And then they would wipe off and just get right back in it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like for a lot of the live shows, you know, we would have these meetings ahead of time of your do's and don'ts, your yeses and no's. What do you like? What do you don't like? And have everyone in a room hearing about them. So when you're shooting it, no one's lines are crossed. You know, that's part of it. And that's the responsible part of this, of being a producer. But overall, yeah, the orgies were chaotic. That's the only word I can describe.
They were chaos. Yeah. And when you did it live, was it? I didn't know you did. How were you doing it live? What, like on StreamMate or something? Or
we were doing. I think the StreamMate was one of them for a while. Mm-hmm. We had first like these encoders all looped together, and we had the signal going from the cameras, multiple cameras going into the encoders, and then we would put it out to the internet, and then it would replay, and then the raw footage would then go back to browsers. They would recut them and then put them in the members area, you know, and they would cut out the problematic areas, whether it be aforementioned duty or anything else, or if someone, let's just say, was not completely sober and they went off the rails, a lot of that was taken out, and that was stuff I had to watch out for. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, there were some people that couldn't keep their shit together during the live shows, and you're like, you really just blew it, didn't you? You know, but it happened a lot. You know, people just couldn't keep their shit together. So we had a pretty strong policy. Like, people knew, don't be egregious with your intoxication. Like, if you're going to swap, if you're going to take a shot real quick before in the bathroom and I don't know about it, of course that shit happened. But like, if you're like stumbling around falling or you didn't get your meds straight and you're speaking in code, you're not going live. And that actually happened a few times where I'm like, I got to pull you. Yeah. So there was, the office trusted me to do what was right throughout the entire career until towards the end. And when they started validating a lot of the younger behavior and questioning my judgment, which, listen, I'm not saying I'm perfect, but I'm also saying there's a responsibility on the younger generation to speak up and express their displeasure when it's happening. And not expect me to be a mind reader.
And I feel like also some woman that you shouldn't just get into porn if you're not comfortable with certain stuff. That's my bottom line. Like,
you could have said it better.
That's why I think there's a problem with OnlyFans right now. Even though I have an OnlyFans or whatever.
Sure.
And I see a lot of girls that they open it. And what's crazy is they're jumping to the most extreme scene or the most extreme thing. But they are not sexually there and ready.
Right.
What you're going to do in the bedroom. And that being like kind of why I made this, I felt like people were pushing sex work like everywhere, like jump on OnlyFans. Oh, you should do this. You should do that. But you should only do what you're really comfortable with. And it's a very personal thing for a woman to be naked in public to sell her nudes or to. Mm-hmm. But you know, you have to, whatever you do in sex work, you need to be 100% comfortable. So I just felt like when I saw all these girls get on OnlyFans and all that, and then they're jumping on productions, I saw disasters. I was like, I'd hate, like, wonder what the,
yeah, know? Well, you nailed exactly what I was feeling, and I'm glad you could see that. And I'm glad this is a woman.
I see it still to this day. I'm like, what the hell are they even in this business? They're, you know, I meet some people, there's people that will never be on my podcast because I personally feel like they're frauds.
Right. Well, listen, I'm so glad because, like, I could be dismissed as, like, as a misogynist. But when I'm hearing what I believe coming from your mouth and you actually agree with it, I'm like, no, I think it's reasonable and rational. It's not misogynistic and it's not judgmental. It's reasonable, like logical. It's responsible. All of these things. Like the thing that was happening more and more was I would get these girls on the list that was passed down from Montreal, and I would go like, cool, cool, cool. Who the fuck is that? And then I would circle it and I would ask the head office. I'm like, who is this person? How do you know them? Oh, she's got a really good big following on Instagram. I'm like, oh, so you know nothing about her. No, that's right. Okay. Well, I have concerns. I was like, what if things go sideways? And you know what the answer was for the longest time? It was, we trust you, Vic. You know, you always get the job done. You know, I don't know if you can see it behind me, but there's a Philadelphia Eagles helmet signed that the head people at Brazzers sent me after the Eagles won the Super Bowl 6 years ago, as a token of appreciation for being their quote unquote frontline commander. That's exactly what they called me. Mm-hmm. And there was a time where it was like, yeah, they knew I was on the front lines and they trusted my decision. And then eventually it was like, no, we're going to validate and we're going to shoot these unvetted people. And if there's a problem, we're going to throw you under the bus. Like, that's what was happening, you know?
Yeah, I just see that as kind of, it's kind of, anybody can have an IG, I feel like. Anybody.
Right.
And people build up their social medias or posting photos, but it's different forms of sex work. You have to be mentally there. Like, if you're going to be a dom, are you mentally able to give out the instructions? If you're going to do porn, can you perform? Are you willing to be on a set for 15, 16 hours, sit in different positions? You know, if you're going to escort, are you willing, you know, do you feel comfortable enough to talk to somebody, you know? And I'm currently seeing a lot of people just jump into sex work because they see an article, but they don't know the full reality of it.
Sure. Well, that's why I wrote the book too, because I can inform people totally of the real. Now, mind you, a lot of what I cover is more historical.
Yeah.
The building of Brazzers and my shit show of relationship from one to the other to the other. But I do get into these lessons for performers, like, because I had people sit and ask me, what do I do to get into porn? I'm so glad you asked, because I gave them the real. I told them everything. I wasn't like a salivating agent being like, how much money can I make out of this one? You know, it wasn't like that. It was like, I'm going to talk to you because you're a human and I want, you know, at least you to be informed so you can make informed decisions.
Yeah.
And I also believe too, it's like, you really shouldn't be shooting for studios until you're 21. If you want to try sex work from 18, just do your OnlyFans. Stay away from the studio system.
Or, you know what, there was like, Florida's trying to pass a law where they want sex workers to be over 21. The only reason I say I'm on the fence is I actually started dancing when I was 17, but technically 18. I was a single parent. I started dancing to pay my bills and all that. I did not drink actually until the day I turned 21 because I was a responsible parent. I was going there. So, but I did have friends that were other strippers that got in and got themselves into a whole bunch of trouble. And to this day, I can admit that I was a dancer, but this day, if I, you know, they would never, they're publicly like, oh, they're so ashamed. So, like, you know, I agree with porn. It should be 21 and up. I totally with you with that, with other forms of sex work, you know, but I've seen where the immaturity is for certain people.
Well, be specific. Are you talking stripping? Or are you talking?
Well, escorting? I was a stripper. I did, you know, see people like in person and stuff like that. Back in that day, you didn't have to do the full enchilada.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think, yeah, if you want to do OnlyFans at 18 and it's your brand and you're building it on your own, I don't see a problem with that. And then you can at least take the 3, 4 years before you're 21 to realize, is this for me? Is it not for me? And if it's not, then at least you know, or you stay within your comfort zone.
Stay.
I've,
That's the vital thing, to stay in your comfort zone.
yeah. Yeah. And they don't. And, they get hooked up with an agent, and the agent promises a lot. And I just wonder if they really are informing them as much as they should. You know, I kind of rake some agents under the coals a little bit for not, for being the agents that you're not supposed to be, not really looking out for your talent, more about turning them out so they can keep generating income and not worrying about their mental health. I think that's all part of it. I think it's all should be what an agent does.
Yeah,
But
because then it puts you as a director in an uncomfortable spot, because here you are getting a girl that they would lie to. And I know plenty of stories. We will not name any agencies
right.
in the past, but I lived in LA from 2008 to 2019, and I had a lot of friends that were at a particular agency, and I heard a lot of things but from this particular agent, we're not naming the name. And they were put in different position. And a lot of those girls that I knew of in the past are, they're not even in the, I saw tons and, because I used to have a bachelor party business too. And I did bachelor parties with different girls. And there's a lot of girls that did porn that to this day, they're not doing anything. You know, they don't even have an OnlyFans.
It was funny. I went on some of the agents' websites just out of morbid curiosity to see who's still in and who isn't. And all the new faces that I saw, and then some of the agencies not even existing anymore, or really been thinned out. I was like, wow, who are these people? This is a whole new generation, a whole new game that I hope those people running that shit show know what they're doing. Because it seems to me, and I say this to people, that every producer out there is holding a ticking time bomb in this atmosphere. And it's just a question of whether or not theirs is going to blow up in their face. You know? So, yeah,
No, that's,
I get worried about that.
yeah, that's good. Yeah, well, it's good you worry about it. It's that's all the things that people don't realize. You know what I'm saying? That, you know, peak girls that think, oh, I'm gonna be a porn star and I'm gonna make all this money, and it's doesn't end up like that necessarily. You're not the, you know, you're not gonna be the next Ava DeVine. I have yet to see the next Ava DeVine, somebody close to it.
Right. No, I think they broke the mold when they made her
Yeah,
100%. Yeah, and I mean, and that's what makes her special, and that's why I was glad to highlight some of her shenanigans. Which here's one story that I do talk about in the book that I'll give people a little teaser on. Was when the head office. This was when I was shooting in my house. I shot my house for the first, let's say, year and a half of living here, and I had a back room, which was my studio, and I shot doctor scenes back there. And they wanted to pair her with Sexy Vanessa, her
Oh,
friend.
that's my other friend too.
Right. Which I first saw Sexy Vanessa in Florida when I lived down there at a gym she belonged to. And she brought everyone's in, like, you look at this woman, you're like you can't help when she walks by you, you're like, what? And then when she would do squats, I swear to God. Like in front of the whole gym, and you're like, what is going on right now? So that's what I saw. So when I saw she was in porn, like 15 years after that, I was like tickled. I was like, this is the greatest thing. So I shoot Ava, or I have them trying to be booked, and their schedules were not syncing up. And Ava said, look, I can do this one day, but I have to bring one of my Johns with me. And I said, okay. And I knew Vanessa was cool with it. But it was really a matter of, will the male talent be cool with it? And the first guy was like, nope, not at all. So then I asked this dude, he was Hungarian. Eastern Euro guys, they're a different mold altogether. Nothing fazes them at all.
I love the Eastern Europeans.
So I hit him up. I'm like, hey, this is the situation. What do you think? He goes, no problem. I will just fuck her harder. And I was like, you're the man for the job. So the day arrives, and in comes Ava driving with what looks like my grandfather in the passenger seat. And he's dressed like a grandfather. He's got pastel colored clothing. And he, right away, I go up to him. I'm like, how are you? Welcome. Let me know if you need anything. He's like, I am so happy you let me come here today. This is like a dream come true. Like I was doing Make-A-Wish Foundation for this older gentleman. Now, when I went to shake his hand, like this is the shaking hand, right? Mm-hmm. But it was like kind of balled up like a fist. Mm-hmm. So he shook me with his other hand like that. I'm like, okay, that's interesting. Well, we get to the shoot. And so I'm positioned where I've got Ava and Vanessa and Anthony, sorry, the Hungarian guy right in front of me. And then Chuckles. Okay, she calls him, his name was Chuck, but she mm-hmm. kept calling him Chuckles. And I was like,
I think,
like,
I know who that is.
And she's like, she was just kept calling him Chuckles. So I was like, why do you call him Chuckles, Ava? She's like, well, I call him Chuckles McNuckles because he fists me with his bad fist. And I'm like, holy fucker. I look over at Chuckles and he's got this embarrassed look on his face, like ashamed. And I'm like, wow, fly your freak flag, sir. Like, that was just like, okay, but that wasn't it. I saw that smile again literally about an hour later when I'm shooting and my back is to Chuckles. And every now and again, Ava would, when we cut, she would go behind. I'm not looking at what she's doing. Keep your eyes forward. Keep your eyes forward. She would come back and we would shoot it. My battery dies. I'm like, all right, I will be right back. Leave the room. I'm there. I'm gone for not even a minute. I come running back. Soon as I open the door, Ava, look, Vic, Chuckles came. And she has his nut all over her hands. And I look over at Chuckles, who's like sitting there, shy and embarrassed. In his yellow pants, he has a big wet stain from where he came. And I'm like, well, that is going to be imprinted in the gray matter forever. Thank you, Ava Devine. I appreciate that. So that was a little anecdote that I shared in this book. And that wasn't the only one. Like, she gets a lot of play in my book. That's for sure.
Yeah. Oh, she gets a lot of play on this podcast.
Good.
Yeah. Well, she gets a lot. I always mention her, and because to me, I'm a good friend. I don't like get jealous of my friends. I like having successful friends, but I always put her like top of the, she's the head, porn star. Like other porn stars, like to me, you got to like level up to her.
Well, there was a reason she was like in the final phase of that live show. Yeah. Like this is Satan's lair where we're going, right. You know? And so they had to satisfy an insatiable Ava Devine. You're like, that's not intimidating off the bat, but there were some dudes that rose up to the occasion and actually delivered, you know? So I wouldn't say that there was a winner of that thing who got a contract that never happened. Mm-hmm. It definitely was, if I look back, what was the craziest? The epilogue of my book. That spells it all. It's a tour de force. Like, I really had to end it with, like, okay, I realize I just beat the shit out of everyone who read this book, but we're not even
Oh, there's
done
a
yet.
Lot more stories in that book. Yeah. There's a lot more. Like, I just put the Spotify in this week because mm-hmm. usually I find, like, a podcast or two. Now I'm going to listen to that, like, when I go to the gym and I work out. I'm looking forward to it. Yeah.
Well, that was recorded over 40 days mm-hmm. and edited over 50. And
Did you do it from home or you went somewhere?
I did. Okay. I did it from home. I have a walk-in closet. I would wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning sometimes when it was nice and quiet. I do my best work in like during the witching hour, like at that point. And I like the way my voice sounded. And I was sober, completely sober. No drinks, no weed, which is like, you know, I've been smoking weed since I was 16. So I didn't do any weed because I wanted to have the voice be very clear and present and not fucked up. My alter ego comes out quite a bit in this book. And that was when I broke sobriety. Once I got all the straight reading done, that's when I broke sobriety in a lot of different ways. So that could be done. And there could be different voices for the alter ego. The alter ego is that voice in your head that is kind of guiding you and getting you through this insane existence. So you get out on the other side pretty clean. So I had to be a little bit more of a performance. And there were some days I was sweating coming out of that closet because I was really putting a lot of performance into this. Like, there was nothing about it that was phoned in. I guess that's what I want to tell everyone who is listening to this, that this was every ounce of my soul I put into my project, this project here. And I didn't want to release it until it was absolutely perfect and what I wanted to reveal to the world. So you're getting something that's coming from a very real, honest, raw, emotional standpoint. And it is going to affect you. And you are going to have feelings that you're like, oh, I've had people say, you know, some of it I found very sad. Some of it I was crying. Some of it I was laughing hysterically. Some of it was pretty gross. But the feedback I've gotten, women have really appreciated it. They're like, you know, it's kind of sexy that you were so fearless in revealing yourself to everyone and showing your flaws and showing that you're a really human. And I was not expecting that from a guy who was shooting porn. And that's, I think, the biggest hurdle I have to
overcome. Well, people don't seem to, you know, you are in the sex business, so you're considered a sex worker. And a lot of people don't realize that overall sex workers have, you know, we're humans too in this business. They think that because we're like so superficial of a person and they don't understand that, you know, day to day, we have real people problems, real people emotions, and real, like, they don't get it. That's why earlier I asked you about how your relationship was, because the misconception a lot of civilian squares have is they think that you're getting all laid at left and right and getting all kinds of pussy. And that's, you know, that's not really the case. You know,
well, I'll tell this, after my breakup with my fiance, that was the case. I went a little haywire. And it was like a kid in the candy store, like, okay, who's next? Like, you know, and there was a lot of like goofy missteps in all of that, which I chronicle quite a bit. And then I went to another relationship where there was a lot of cheating, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of deception. But when I got out of that one, then I was then wiser to it, where, yeah, I was having a lot of sex because it was so easy. I was exposed to it every day and I didn't really care. That was the key, not giving a shit, not going in with the intent, I want to bang. It was like, all right, if you're cool and this is not going to bring me drama, I'm down. But overall, I've gotten to the point now where I'm like, it's got to be great. There's got to be chemistry. It's got to be earth shaking because I've had all
You've had
that.
It all.
Right. Yeah. So now what is it you're looking for? And it's more of a connection of some kind. So weird to say that, because that was so not like me like 5 years ago.
But I think every man gets to a point. I have a little saying that I say, usually men should stick and move to about their 35, unless they're in LA or New York, they should wait till they're 45. Okay. But with men, generally their testosterone starts to, and also I think like, cause like I had a cousin, he got married at 27, for instance, and I felt like that was too young. And I look at him today, he's 18 months younger and he looks like hell, you know, because he got married so young. And it's kind of like, that's just, people argue it, but that's human nature for a man just to date, you know, get around and all that. And then after a certain point, you know, hey, now it's time to, you know, get a relationship. And a lot of women don't understand that about men, that they're going to like stick and move. And they want to go play and wait. But, you know, as the man gets older is actually better time. Like in your case, I consider you like, you should wait just after 45 to really settle down, stick and move then. And now you've had your fun, you know? Yeah. So now you could settle down and you would be a good catch because you've had all this experience, you know, but then it's also, you talking about your past, you can't just go on like, well, you could go on Bumble and all those sites, but then it's like revealing your true self to the new person. And how are they going to accept you?
Well, that's like when I'm on the dating sites, it's all revealed. Yeah. And if you're still with me, okay, read the book, listen to the book, you know, and if you're still with me, let's see what we have. And there have been a few of them, you know,
there's been a few that were like,
It's been inspiring in some ways, and it's given me hope that there is, that I'm not going to just be like the aging bachelor dog man that's going to be on the road with his dogs and not have a female counterpart. But that's really it. But yeah, I think the other challenge of this book too was getting people to believe that a pornographer could actually write something of intelligence and substance and thought and creativity. Because they're like, okay, he's a pornographer. What does he got to say? And when they've read it, people are like, you know, my expectations were not there. They're like, dude, you fucking rocked it. Like, it moves fast. it's fast paced. Like, I'm really surprised and they tip their hat. It makes me feel good. So yeah, we are now just at the point of trying to get this thing out however we can.
Oh, I hear. Yeah, the marketing aspect of getting it. Yeah.
Well, that's the trick.
Your book's on Amazon, right, too?
Yeah, the print copy's on Amazon. You can get signed copies. Like, if you just go to VicLegina.com, it takes you everywhere. I have all my links up there, too. But yeah, it's in the Apple Store to buy as an audiobook. It's on Spotify to stream. So if you have a subscription, you can listen to it as part of your 15 hours. It is on Amazon as a Kindle. If you have Kindle Unlimited, you can get it as part of your monthly. And then it's also available as print. So it depends on what you want. I have something for everyone.
Yeah. So before we end, how many dogs do you have, by the way, right now?
Right now I have two.
Oh, you just have two. Okay.
Yeah. There was one point, like, so ever since I've been a dog owner, six has been total. And there's two left. At one point during the craziest, I had four. Three big German shepherds and, well, she's not there anymore. The little meatloaf with legs.
Oh, I saw that. I saw some of them walking through. That's why I was asking. No, I've had, I have a German shepherd in my Florida house now. So he's 7 years old. Yeah.
Seven. Yeah. They're great dogs. They're great dogs.
Yeah.
Very needy. Needy.
Oh yeah. He's very, very needy. And I personally had a chihuahua. Like at one time I had four chihuahuas. Three chihuahuas. And one of them my chihuahua passed away, but now my ex has he has custody of the dogs. I have the cats. So okay. And I'm gonna, but one of them is a German shepherd and then two other little chihuahua, a fat little chihuahua, like a meatball.
I'll always have a canine counterpart. I can't really see it happening, or at least I will be around them. You know, like, let's just say I get to the point where I don't have any dogs. Mm-hmm. I think I'll always be like taking one from the shelter as a foster to get them out of there and have a rotation that way. I would love to do more of that now, but can't do it with these two. And, you know, you start hearing about canine influenza at these shelters.
Oh, And now you have to be careful walking your dogs, too.
Right. Which my dogs, they just go out in my backyard. So we're all clean and healthy over here. And I just didn't want it to I didn't want to do that by doing more with dogs at the moment, but that's my passion. I'm sure I'll be doing a lot of that as I continue on my journey here.
Since you have retired from directing, what have you been doing since then now for work, may I ask?
So for work, nothing, because I really don't need to. Like, here's the reality. Yeah.
You're set.
Well, there's some caveats to that statement. Okay. As long as I keep my nut low and I live reasonably and responsibly, I'm fine. And I have checked those boxes. The only problem with that is it kind of limits the fun aspect. You know, like, you have to pick your shots of where you want to go have fun, unless, of course, you do get a job that is paying you some money. I mean, I get residuals from this. Mm-hmm. And my financial advisor, though, he's being put to the task, and he's like, you know, having some money come in wouldn't, you know, it changes the dynamic of everything. And I agree. Here's my thing. I have worked for people that I don't like for a very long time, doing something that was really drying my soul, sucking me dry. And the truth is, I'm never going back there. I will take a lot less money to do something interesting and fun for a cause that I believe in, rather than trying to just have cash so I can ball.
That's a smart way of life, because a lot of people they'll work and they're spinning their wheels, but they're not really happy. So that's very smart of you and that's like when people, you know, generally older people retire, they're on a fixed income. So therefore they can't splurge. There's nothing wrong with that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, and that's the thing. So if I want my gravy, I'll just have to go figure out how to get my gravy, and I'll do it. I haven't done anything porn related or shooting related in some years. I haven't touched my camera, and I'm kind of burned out by production just because I've done so much. Like when I'm getting close to 3,800 scenes in my lifetime, like, yeah, you're almost at the point where you're like, I don't need to see another dick in a vagina and a pair of tits. Okay, what dude says, I don't need to see another dick or another vagina or boobs? Like, a straight guy, like, saying, I don't want to see any more of that? Like, that's kind of, I guess it puts the period at the end of the sentence.
Well, it's weird how people like in this the sex worker world, like what we fantasize, like porn doesn't get me excited. It was, I don't know, there was a movie on Netflix, May, December, and there was a scene that got me excited. That was not even porn, but it was like not even a romance scene or whatever. It was just like a one scene that I watched. But it's weird when you're in the business, like what gets you excited isn't like it sometimes surprises other people. So I right. totally understand. I understand where you're coming from, that you're That's like, true. Yeah, but other people don't get it because it's in our face so much that, you know.
Yeah. 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 And go back to your point of what I'm going to do. I mean, I have ideas on things I want to do, you know, truth is I do have these college degrees, which then enable me to teach college and teach again on a college level. Now, when I went to undergrad at Syracuse, they would always have these speakers come in talking about sex. And this is the 90s when, you know, HIV pretty prevalent. And, you know, that was the scary thing back then. And they would bring people in to talk about it and to kind of educate. Well, I think there's a void there of someone educating on the realities of porn. I could fill that void and I could do these guest lectures and I would be happy to do it. And if I can parlay that into a college course somewhere, I would be totally down to do it and I would be good at it. Because anything I decide I'm going to do, we're going 150%. We're going to make sure it's awesome or we're not going to do it. So that's one idea I've been kicking around. You know, doing the acting thing, when I did the trailer for the book, I really enjoyed doing that. It was fun, the acting bug. So there might be a little bit more coming into play. I do have some producers who have gotten a hold of the book and are reading it and they're digging it. So who knows where it could happen? I'm just happy yes. I'm here and we'll see what the future holds.
Right. Well, thank you so much, Vic, for coming on. Please let my audience know your social media and your website again.
Okay. So if you go to, I'm on Twitter and I'm on Instagram at Vic Legina. VicLagina. And if you go to VicLagina.com, that's where you can find all your filthy things, from books to audiobooks to signed books to trailers with boobies, all of it. So check it out. If you liked what I said, you want to support the endeavor, I would appreciate that. And also, if you liked it or hated it, just tweet me, message me. I've been talking to people. People have been enjoying it. The response has been overwhelmingly positive. You know, even for people that I talk shit about, on that final note, it's funny that there is a lot of shit talking in here. And I will own it and I will always answer to any criticisms about all of it. I said it, I will answer to it. I'm a man, I'm an adult. But like, it is quite apparent that there's people that don't read in porn at all, because there was one dude that I talk shit on and I saw him recently and he like shook my hand and said, "It's so great to see you." And I'm mm-hmm. like, wow. Okay. So I guess I don't have much to worry about on that, but yeah, it's been fun. It's been lovely talking to you. You're Thank wonderful. You. And I'm glad we had a great talk.
Yes. And I am Marcella Alonso. If you want to see this episode or many more episodes, you can join my Patreon at MarcellaSobella.com. You can follow me on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube at Marcella Sobella. My Twitter is Marcella with one L underscore LUV. Thank you so much for coming again on Get Schooled.
All right. Yeah, no, my pleasure. And hope to hear.